You are listening to the R1 News here on Radio 191 FM. It is currently 2 minutes past 11. Ko Eileen tēnei.
Ko Quinton aho.
Coming up on the program, I tēnei rā, we speak to OUSA Welfare and Equity Rep Lily Marsh on student access to healthcare. We're joined by the Opportunities Party's Jessica Hammond to discuss concerns about the requirement for political candidates to list their address on campaign material. R1 News' Kaia Kahurangi Jameson comes to us live from the Octagon as protesters clear out. All that plus the bulletin and weather with Bonnie, coming up in the hour. First up, here's Repair from Ben Shaw and Pons with Stay With Me.
God.
You are listening to R1 News. It is 11:07 and that was Stay With Me from Repair, Ben Shaw and The Ponds. Now we cross to Bonnie with the bulletin.
This is the news on Radio 1 91 FM.
Kia ora koutou. This is the R1 News Bulletin. It's 11:07 AM. Ko Bonnie Aho. The Octagon mandate protest has been cleared out this morning after a 60-day stint. The Dunedin City Council gave an official warning to the camp over the weekend that if they had not vacated the area by noon on Monday, the group would be trespassed and face legal consequences for staying. Infamous jailhouse lawyer Arthur Taylor has been an organising force behind the Octagon protest and says that the protest will continue in some form. A resurgent of the Parliament protest group in Wellington, which calls themselves Unite, advertised a two-week hotspot protest around the city 2 weeks ago, which has received minimal turnout. Britain has agreed to supply Ukraine with defensive weapons to fight the Russian invasion. Prime Minister Boris Johnson was in the war-torn city of Kiev with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky yesterday as a show of the nation's support of Ukraine, with the two leaders promising increased future collaboration. Zelensky has called on other Western leaders to increase their support of Ukraine as reports of Russian-perpetrated torture and civilian deaths increase. The government's apprenticeship subsidy scheme is set to end in September, with tradespeople expressing concerns that the workforce will dwindle. The apprenticeship workforce has boomed by 77% since the government introduced the subsidies scheme in 2020 to combat the economic effects of the pandemic, with 21,000 people now apprenticing in trades. Employers receive a benefit for each apprentice from the government to pay for on-the-job training. Master Electricians Chief Executive Bernie McLaughlin says that a large portion of the workforce are set to retire in the next few years, and despite the high number of people entering, they will need more incoming workers to combat the job losses. That's the news. Now for weather.
The Radio 1 91 FM weather.
In Otsipotsi I tēnei rā, we have a high of 20 degrees. Fine, a bit of high cloud developing later this afternoon and some northerly breezes. A low of 11 degrees overnight. Tomorrow, Apopo, we're having a bit of rain coming through, then becoming fine in the afternoon. A slightly chillier day with a high of 17, some southwesterlies moving through, and a low of 9 degrees overnight. And that's your weather.
Kia ora, Bonnie. Coming up on the program, we speak to OUSA Welfare and Equity Representative Lily Marsh on access to healthcare for students. First up, we have got VK with Rust here on the R1 News. The time is 10 minutes past 11.
Sick as hell. Smile and you'll wish me well. Call me crazy, I just love the thrill. Got a demon in this bottle that I'm set to kill. Gravity, no ground, pushing me down. Hands tied, I'm bound to the system. Casualty, gun crown, circus show. Clowns, hands tied to the system. From the lies you tell, round and round on this carousel. Pack my bags, now I live in hell. Hands are on the throttle and I'm dressed to kill. Gravity, no ground, pushing me down. Hands tied, I'm bound to the system. Casualty, gun ground, circus show. Clowns, hands tied to the system. We'll be right back.
This is R1 News here on Radio 1. Remember, as always, if you have any questions or comments throughout the show, you can text in on 0212-RADIO-1. That's 0212-272-3461. February saw COVID-19 rip its way through the student community. The first location of interest in Dunedin's Omicron outbreak was a large Castle Street party in Flow Week, which saw COVID work its way through sparsely furnished flats. At this time, PCR tests were the norm and self-reporting was non-existent. This meant that when students tested positive for COVID-19, their test result was sent to their GP, often located in another city. The result of this was student COVID-19 cases were often reported as cases in other district health boards, resulting in an underrepresentation of cases in the southern DHB until the locations were reclassified. Amidst all of this, the University of Otago told students to enrol in a GP practice in Dunedin to ensure their results were accurately reported and to make access to healthcare easier for students studying in Otipoti. This statement, however, wasn't without its caveats. Excluding the University and Polytechnic Student Health Services, only 8 GPs in Otipoti are taking new enrolments. These clinics are further limited, as many of these GPs limit enrolments based on age or proximity to the clinic. Only 3 of these clinics are within a half-hour walk of the Central Library. Student health is also already stretched thin, with students waiting up to 2 weeks for a GP appointment in August last year. We're joined on the phone now by Otago University Students Association Welfare and Equity Representative Lily Marsh to talk about healthcare availability for students. Morena Lily, it's great to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me. How are you?
I'm great. Lily, do you think that student health is fit for purpose?
Well, it's a really tricky situation, especially in the context of, you know, healthcare availability all over the country. That's, you know, not an excuse. It's just kind of recognising the situation with GP shortages countrywide. Obviously, students, you know, have had difficulties accessing healthcare, especially with the Omicron wave that went through the student community and still is here. I think it's, you know, it's really disappointing that all of our students aren't able to book appointments in a timely manner, but then, you know, there's not a simple quick fix solution given the countrywide shortages of doctors.
Mm-hmm. And so on that note, with student health having big wait times and only a select number of GPs in Dunedin taking enrolments, what do you think could be done to make healthcare more accessible for students?
I think kind of working together as a community to streamline the process, you know, with student health using telehealth appointments and things like that, it can, you know, create a more efficient process if, you know, student health knows if you need a telehealth appointment or you do need to be seen in person. That can really help, you know, reduce doubling up patient appointments and things like that. And in terms of access to health in general, I think, you know, that's a very big, you know, meaty question. But yeah, there's obviously a lot of work to be done.
Mm-hmm. And so on urgent appointments, considering the wait times can be quite large, last time I checked, urgent doctors charged $88 for a consultation with a doctor or $60 with a community services card. Do you think this is affordable for students? And what would you like to see done to make this service more accessible for students?
Yeah, obviously that's quite a large cost. I don't think it's affordable for students. I've had to, you know, utilise that myself, and it was a pretty big dent in the old wallet. But, you know, obviously that's unfortunately not something OUSA can control, but it would be really great to see, either through community services card or just student policies in general, if we could either have a discount or, you know, even ideally get appointments for free. But, yeah, obviously it's not quite the situation.
Is that something that OUSA would look at working with urgent doctors to provide? Oh, Lily, are you still there or has your phone line dropped out? Okay, it appears that we have lost...
Sorry.
Oh, no, hello.
Sorry, I managed to put my phone on mute.
That's quite all right. We'll come back to that question. Is that something that OUSA would look at working with the urgent doctor services to provide?
Yeah, I definitely think it could be quite a practical way of helping, especially the financial burden of healthcare. Yeah, obviously, it's quite a kind of high-level project would have to work with the DHB, which is obviously, you know, changing in the near future. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it could be a, you know, a good step towards increasing access.
And so in the interim period before such thing happens, what support does OUSA provide at the moment for students who are struggling to access healthcare?
If anyone's struggling, I would really recommend getting in touch with student support. You know, they cover a really wide range of topics and they know a lot and can put you in contact with the right people. And then I'd also recommend if, you know, there's something urgent going on that's not quite at the level of going to ED, you know, just a reminder that Healthline is still there.
Excellent. And so one final question for you. Some students are left in an awkward position after finishing university because they no longer have access to student health once their student ID expires. But at the same time, with GPs being rather inaccessible in Aotearoa and across New Zealand, they can end up without a standard doctor's clinic. What arrangements would you like to see made for students in this position?
Yeah, that's a tricky one as well, because obviously we're seeing shortages among current students. And so, you know, it kind of comes down to who are we going to prioritise, given that it's already kind of under-resourced. You know, I think it could be nice if there was some continuity in the sense that admin staff kind of make sure that they are getting some form of support or being able to book an appointment if they really need it. But then obviously we don't want to be taking appointments away from current students, because that kind of compounds the issue that we're seeing at the moment.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Lily. It was great to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Excellent. That was Lily Marsh, the OUSA Welfare and Equity Rep, on student access to primary healthcare and COVID's impacts on it. Coming up, we speak to Jessica Hammond of the Opportunities Party on concerns surrounding the requirement for political candidates to display their address publicly on campaign material. First up, though, here's Parabola West with Hannah here on R1 News.
Since break of the day, she walks with spirits at night.
You are listening to the R1 News. The time is 27 minutes past 11. That was Molly and the Chromatics with Mad People, and before that we had Parabola West with Hannah. Requirements for politicians and political candidates to list an address on campaign material have come under scrutiny in recent days, with some saying the rule is unsafe and may pose a barrier to people wishing to run for office. Under the current rules, candidates must list an address on campaign material. It raises particular concerns about women in politics. Harassment against whom has been in the media lately. Last month, two members of Young National resigned after they were found to have been anonymously harassing Christchurch politicians Sarah Templeton and Megan Woods. The call for the rules around addresses to change has been circulating on social media after Waitaki Deputy Mayor Melanie Tavendale spoke to News Talk ZB and called the rule an invasion of privacy. Dunedin Mayor Aaron Hawkins has called for an end to the requirement, saying on Twitter that it isn't in the public interest, is a barrier to candidates standing, and a genuine safety issue. Jessica Hammond of the Opportunities Party has also shared her concerns about the rules on Twitter, saying it in particular disadvantages women, small parties, and independent candidates without offices. We are joined now by Jessica on the phone line. Kia ora, Jessica. Thanks for joining us.
Kia ora. Nice to speak to you. Thank you.
So how does this rule specifically disadvantage candidates from small parties and those independent candidates?
Yeah, so in both the local government and the general local government elections and general government elections, we're required to put an address on all of our sort of promotional materials. We need to have a statement, and you can be charged $40,000 for not having this particular kind of statement, a promotion statement. And it needs to have your name and address. And for people who are in sort of big parties who have a lot of money and who have offices, they can just put their local office address and that's fine. But for those of us from smaller parties, people running for local government and independents, we don't tend to have those sorts of offices. So, you either have to put your personal address where you may live by yourself, with flatmates, with children, with parents. Or in my case, although I stand in Ohariu in Wellington, the only office address option I had was an address in Dunedin. So for safety reasons, that's what I chose to use, which, is great. I had that option for safety, but also meant I had people thinking that I was some carpetbagger, who wasn't even local, trying to win an electorate that I had nothing to do with.
Are there advantages to the requirement for politicians and candidates to have that publicly available address? Does it make the process of holding politicians to account easier?
Look, I mean, you might be able to hold politicians to account, but I don't think in any appropriate ways. For instance, turning up at someone's home address where they live with their families. So I think if we want to hold politicians to account, there are much better ways to do that. I don't think it serves any purpose. I think it's very outdated. It's outdated for so many reasons, but there are better ways to contact someone if you want to. Even if you want to tell them that one of their signs has been damaged, for instance, no one's going to write you a letter, and you certainly don't want people to be showing up at your house unannounced. Or if people have gripes, that could be pretty concerning, having them show up at your house. And it also, I think it reflects a time when people had more stable housing. I'd hate to think what happens if you're a renter and you get evicted partway through a campaign and have to change every promoter statement you have.
So in the discussion around this, we have seen, and you mentioned it on Twitter, there's a gendered element, and harassment against women politicians, it has been in the news lately. How does this specifically disadvantage women politicians?
Yeah, well, we know women are more likely to receive threats of violence, but also, even for those of us who don't receive threats of violence, there is a chilling effect. For instance, we have a volunteer at the Opportunities Party. She's absolutely fantastic, would be a brilliant candidate, but she has been stalked before, and she has said explicitly she will not be a candidate because she doesn't want to have that sort of information out there. We also have, here in Wellington, local councillor Rebecca Matthews has received a death threat, which has made her have to change what kind of information is available about her movement. So it really, it has this effect that we can't campaign as freely as men might. Now, of course, men do receive threats as well. James Shaw was assaulted, but I think there's a slightly different element to it. It's heightened, and there seems to be there's just more quantity of threats, but also a different quality of them. Sometimes are really quite nasty, misogynistic stuff happening.
What does need to be done to make things safer for our women politicians in Aotearoa, do you think, perhaps ahead of local body elections this year?
Yeah, well, I mean, it could change ahead of local body elections. We just need a bill under urgency. It would be really simple. So we'd really just need to remove that requirement to have a physical address. It would be easier for everybody as well, because if you want to get in touch with someone, it's much easier to be able to call or email. So just taking away that requirement to have a physical address. I mean, absolutely, the Electoral Commission can hold those addresses to make sure people are genuine, and we do need to know who is making advertisements, but that address requirement, I think, just needs to go.
Well, kia ora, Jessica. Thank you so much for your time.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
That was Jessica Hammond of the Opportunities Party on concerns about the requirements for politicians to list an address for campaign material. Remember, if you missed an interview, you can find it on the R1 News podcasts page on Spotify. Coming up, we will cross live to R1 News' Kaia Kahurangi Jameson at the Octagon as anti-mandate protesters clear out ahead of a trespass notice set to be issued to any remaining protesters at midday today. First up, here is the Upbeats with Not Forever on the R1 News. The time is 25 minutes to 12.
You can't, it's not forever. Hold up, young man, don't do enough. These days I've been so stuck, and I know I could be better for ya. Hold up, young man, don't do enough. These days I've been so stuck, and I know I could be better for ya. Wake up, saying shit again all day. I've been really doing me, trying to stay on track. Why you always on my line, wanna run it back? And I don't even have the time, something that I lack. Okay, might not get that to bed today. I got moves to make, I got plans to change. Why they always wanna talk like they're doing the most? Like I mean something, I'm the one to boast. Don't get too close, baby, I've been known to ghost. And then I might just dip, leave you on your own. I've been up too late, might hit your phone again. Story of my life, how you gonna tell your friends? I don't like the way that you always play pretend. I don't have the time on hand to make amends, so what you really saying then? I've been up so late these days, baby, just trying to get some money on my plate today, so what you really gonna say to me like that? I don't know why you playing all these games, I don't have the time. Hold up, young man, don't do enough, these days I've been so stuck, and I know I could be better for ya. Young man, don't do enough. These days I've been so stuck, and I know I could be better for ya. Hold up, young man, don't do enough. These days I've been so stuck, and I know I could be better for ya. Hold up, young man, don't do enough. These days I've been so stuck, and I know I could be better for ya.
That was And Some with Better For Ya, and before that, The Upbeats with Not Forever, here on R1 News. It is 21 minutes to 12. Today marks 2 months since the anti-mandate occupation of Utiputi's Octagon began. Protesters began camping outside the Dunedin City Council buildings in support of the larger convoy and occupation in Wellington. Members of the public have reported feeling discouraged from visiting the Octagon, where protesters had set up a camp equipped with portaloos, a makeshift lounge, stage for music performances, and flags associated with white nationalist movements. In a statement on Facebook, Utiputi Mayor Aaron Hawkins said that with the removal of vaccine mandates for the majority of New Zealanders, the protest had run its course. We're joined on the phone now by R1 News' Kaya Kahurangi Jameson, who's at the scene of the protest. Kia ora, Kaya.
Kia ora, Quentin.
Kaya, are there any tents remaining 20 minutes before the protest needs to be packed up?
So the protesters look to have completely dismantled the camp and all the structures around it at the Octagon, as if in order to do so, as you say, by noon today. Over the weekend, the group posted a message on the Telegram platform following the warning from Dunedin Council, saying that they had decided to take the camp down peacefully. The length of this day is pretty long, and that's pretty evident by the state of the lawn on the upper half of the Octagon where they've been residing.
Excellent. So you're saying then it's similar to the one in Wellington where the lawns have been pretty much destroyed?
Yeah, so the lawns are in a pretty dire quality. There are large patches where the grass has died completely due to the protesters' tents and other structures being out for 2 months.
Are there any signs of the protest remaining at all, the non-protesters on that side of the Octagon?
There is a large gathering of people who look to be protesters left over, and they've got a couple of signs up saying things like end all medical apartheid and end all mandates. There's still lots of chalk writing on the boards, and I would say there's about 30 people still here.
Is there any police presence?
There don't appear to be any police presence, no.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for that, Kaya. It was great to have you on. That was R1 News' Kaya Kahurangi Jameson, live from the Octagon, where anti-COVID mandate protesters are clearing out ahead of a trespass notice set to be issued to any remaining protesters at 12 p.m. Coming up, we're speaking to critic Te Arohi editor Fox Mayer, as we do every week. But first up, here is Arohi with The Best Thing I've Ever Seen.
I'd like to be
You are listening to the R1 News here on Radio 191 FM. The time is 9 minutes to 12, and we are joined now, as we are every week, by critic Te Arohi editor Fox Meyer to chat this week's issue, which features the annual Great Fish and Chip Review. Kia ora, Fox.
Hi, how are you going?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Excellent.
So, this week, we have got the Fish and Chip Review, as happens every year. What I want to know is, how does the Fish and Chip Review work, and how do your reporters avoid getting sick from eating that amount of fish and chips?
Well, you know, I love my numbers, and I love my statistics. We tend to do this multiple people review it. It keeps people in the office. Everybody brings one fish and chips order of their choice, and then they pass around the fish, pass around the chips, and they rate them on a scale of 1 to 10. We average those ratings, and that's how we get our winner.
R1 news manager and local fine dining connoisseur Bonnie Harrison was slightly dismayed at the exclusion of Stewart Street Institution Best Cafe. From the list, how do you shortlist the contenders?
Right. Well, I mean, it's up to the people who decide to take part in the review. They each get to bring one place. They all get to bring their favorite. It sounds like Bonnie might just have a very nuanced palate that a critic is not partial to.
Mayhaps. So this week's feature on golf is fascinating. I want to know if it changed your perspective on golf and what you learned about the future of golf courses.
Actually, it absolutely did. I've had a disdain for golf from pretty much the moment I was born. I think I've always thought of it as a very pointless exercise. But researching kind of where it came from and how it ended up where it is now as sort of dog whistle for privilege made me realize that this game is actually, at its core, very egalitarian. Like, it should be something that literally anybody can play. Like, you're just putting a ball in a hole, right? It's not that hard. But sort of starting to figure out, you know, why land ownership and all of that has contributed to a greater culture of exclusion. That definitely reinforced some of the purposes of having it. Overall, I think, you know, there's a quote in there that said that, like, fake golf, capital DG, like, as an institution, is something that we can all look at is probably a bad thing. But that doesn't mean that we should hate the game itself, and we should probably try to reclaim it as much as we can.
Absolutely. I really enjoyed reading that. And finally, on the etymology of LOL, why did you choose to write about laugh out loud over, say, LMAO, ROFL, ROFL LMAO, or the ubiquitous OMG?
OMG would have been a good one. I think that one hasn't really... Like, you can't pronounce that the same way. I was just interested because, you know, it's a word now that I think people say phonetically, right? Like, they don't say LOL as much as they say LOL. Like that's something you might recognize. I thought it was just fascinating that it sort of completely changed meaning in a way. Like, I saw a TikTok on this recently, and, you know, it came out the day after I published this piece, and I thought he maybe worded it better than I did. I was a little miffed at that, but LOL, see? I just thought it was a really interesting way to look at how the internet has changed English language and what that might mean for the future.
Indeed. Well, kia ora Fox, thank you so much for joining us on the show today, and congrats on the issue, as always.
Kia ora, Eveen, thank you very much.
That was Critic Te Arohi editors Fox Meyer talking about issue 7 of Critic Te Arohi, featuring the annual fish and chip review. You can pick it up from stands around uni or online.
So that was Critic Te Arohi editor Fox Meyer talking about issue 7 of Critic Te Arohi. This has been R1 News for Monday, the 11th of April. Ko Quinton Tiene.
Ko Eileen Aho.
This next song is Touch Me, Hold My Hand from Bank here on Radio 1, Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi 91 FM.
Oh, the kereru, or more commonly known as the New Zealand pigeon.
And isn't love important?
Only the finest grubs and work.
Come through one more time. Come through just one more time. Save it.
Come on.